Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Again, fellow basement dwellers, this is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. And this week, I am once again joined by three quarters of the standard bandwagon, three of the, well, the basically the OGs at this point. We've got the man, the myth, the legend, the executive vice president of talent and Wednesday programming, plus, Saturday Night Live extraordinaire, Packer fan, rubbing it in my face that the Pope is from Chicago and yet the Bears can't find a quarterback who can throw for 4,000 yards, Mr. PC Tony, the man whose sound bites actually work when we use them. Like, how you doing, man?
I've re-earned the king of content. As you listen to Bandwagon Nerds, I have been on a brand new show 8 of the last 9 days here on the network, and I'm tired.
Well, this one won't count.
And I'm tired.
This is just your standard recording fare on a Sunday afternoon.
Eight out of the last 9 days, I've been on one of the new drops, so I'm just saying, you know, it's good. It's been fun. It's been great. I've been doing some Four Corners, some Mindless Wrestling podcast. We had Pot is War, you know, the Oddity is out there, the Big Five. We're bringing back a game gone wrong and Unidentified History. So,
Speaking of Unidentified History and Game Gone Wrong and other podcasts of those natures, we also have, The Mr. The Truth is out there, the lawyer himself, David Ungar. How are you, Dave?
Oh, I'm good. Getting to hang out with you fellas here on this lovely kayfabe Monday. So get to talk some nerdy stuff. It's all good. The truth is out there. They're just not going to let anytime.
And while we're on it, happy belated Mother's Day to all those mothers out there. We are recording on Mother's Day and, you know, respect. Did anybody do anything nice for their mothers or the mothers in their lives? I sent Mrs. O'Dowd grocery shopping, and she was so happy for it. It was great.
I got my wife a pretty cool card that I think she liked. It was cat related, so Tony would appreciate that.
Nice.
Unfortunately, my mom's not with us anymore, so I can't do much on that front.
Fair.
But, you know, my sister posted something that was really nice about my mom, and I kind of chimed in on that. So, but yeah, other than that, I think my wife's out doing her own thing. Her kids were here this morning for a little while, and that was fun stuff.
Nice. Hey, what about you, man? Anything nice with the mothers in your life?
Yeah, stopped over and gave her a card with some cash in it to do whatever she'd like to do with it, because, you know, then she can spend it anywhere. And then had made some hot ham and roll sandwiches, and we had some little breakfast sandwiches there, so it's good to go.
It's very nice. I will probably be sent out to pick up a Mother's Day dinner of some sort. That is basically what we do every Sunday. Just this today, it's on Mother's Day. So fun with that. But anyway, happy Mother's Day, belated to all those nerdy mothers out there. We have another great edition of Bandwagon Nerds in front of us, a loaded trailer park. In my opinion, one of the best things about not having a show to cover is that I can then put more trailers in the trailer park. And today is no exception. We got a 5-trailer trailer park. I'm going to give some thoughts, and we're going to go back to talking about Thunderbolts/New Avengers. I wasn't on last week's show, so I want to talk about it on this week's show. And so there's some fun news bites that have come out of that movie since the movie was released last week. We are going to talk a little bit of DC Cinematic Universe. We're going to talk about Disney going controversial with its newest theme park that's been announced. And then we're going to talk about a political story we have to discuss. It's too far into our wheelhouse not to be something that we can't discuss. And so, like I said, loaded agenda today. But we're going to get started with Banjo song number 2, because it's number 2. And so I'm going to turn it to PC Tunney to give us Banjo song number 2. Oh, this is good stuff. I enjoy it thoroughly. There we go. Winding down. Hey, gentlemen, welcome back into the trailer park. Like I mentioned, 5 trailers today. And we're going to start with an Apple TV series trailer that was shared to us by one Mr. PC Tunney, Owen Wilson, starring in the series Stick. Right? I got the right Wilson, right? That was the correct Wilson. I confused them, even though they look nothing alike. Thank you. I appreciate the bell of affirmation. And it's funny, when I looked at the thumbnail of this trailer when Tony shared it and you kind of see the little tagline, I was like, is this just Tim Cup? And I no, this is, so Owen Wilson plays a golfer whose nickname is Stick, who had a colossal meltdown in the midst of a tournament about a decade or so ago that's made him famous. But he is a local pro at some golf course. Looks like he's doing lessons and is miserable when he sees what appears to be a young prodigy shooting next to him. And he takes this young man under his wing and is going to be his coach. The series also stars Marc Maron as like his best friend, I don't quite completely understand what the role is going to be, but this looks like very much, you know, a redemption story. The kid, of course, is missing a father figure, so that's going to play in as well. But I know Dave, Tunney, you both, big golfers. You like to get out there on the links, like stuff like this, stories about golf. So, and Tunney, you shared it, so I'm going to actually hand it over to you first. What drew you to the trailer, and is this something that will get you to temporarily have a subscription to Apple TV to watch?
Yeah, the first thing I was going to say was, you know, with Ted Lasso having another season and just some other things on there, I'm going to go ahead and, yeah, probably pick that back up. I mean, golf drew this to me right away. I am a fan of the Wilson brothers and a lot of the movies they've been in and done as well. I just think it looks good. It's a different kind of story. I can relate to golf driving you insane, and I'm sure Dave can as well. As a younger man in my 20s, I've broken many irons over my leg for various reasons. And it's not hard to do. Those shafts break pretty easy if you do that. And it's like 50, 60, 70 bucks to replace. So, you know, a little frustration out, throw a little money away. But that's about it. I've never, you know, busted a driver or putter or thrown my bag in the woods or the flake or anything like that, or, you know, but golf can be frustrating. It's crazy. It's like the hardest thing, like that and hitting a baseball from a pitcher that's throwing like more than 85 miles an hour is one of the most impossible things to do in the world. If you can shoot like Dave, if you can break 90, you're like one of the top 95% golfers in the world. Or 90% in the world, you know. So,
well, that's not me, but thanks for the vote of support, buddy.
You're on your way to it, though, aren't you?
I've done it a few times. It's not a regular.
So then thing. You can.
You can. If I play very well, then yeah. But this I mean, yeah, the trailer, because it's golf related. Owen Wilson. Hey, there's a lot, like an element of Kingpin in here, wasn't there? You know, just this broken shell of a former champion who's just sitting there drinking up a storm, and then he takes some other young prodigy under his wing to, I don't think it'll be as slapstick and as juvenile as Kingpin was, but I see elements of that, and I'm immediately like, okay, redemption arc, all that fun stuff. Let's see what this show's all about. And it's Apple TV, and they don't miss, so...
It's his buddy sitting at the other end of the bar going down, you know, step by step. The melt. Yeah, it was just hilarious, right? He's just sitting there. He's like, God,
I've never
that...
seen anybody implode like that. I mean, how do you even come back from shit like that?
You probably don't even want to see a golf club, do you? Yeah. He's like, pretty much.
And that's what makes Marc Maron hilarious is his delivery with something like that. Like he can tear it up. So it looks like an entertaining show. And Apple TV rarely misses, like when it comes to their shows and their series. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. Next up, I want to talk about a sequel, Dave, I honestly didn't think we'd get, because while The Old Guard with Charlize Theron was a delightful little Netflix exclusive film, harmless little action flick about immortals fighting a secret war, I didn't know that we were going to need another one. And, but hey, we're going to get another one. And this time we get the added bonus of a villain played by Uma Thurman. And we get a sword fight between Charlize Theron and Uma Thurman, in which Uma Thurman is wielding a katana because that's how she should always be fighting. Kill Bill has determined it. It has claimed it. It has made it so. And therefore, it will forever be that Uma Thurman fights with a katana. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I watched Old Guard. We wrote a review. I definitely remember we wrote a review of Old Guard. I couldn't tell you a damn thing that happened to me.
Yeah, I don't remember.
We generally enjoyed it.
Yes.
I don't remember the movie for shit other than it was a bunch of immortals that were like fighting some secret war. And that's all that I remember.
I didn't recall much about it either until they pulled the gal out of the ocean in the sarcophagus, right? And then it started to come back to me a little bit. It's like, that's right. There was that one immortal who they tucked away in the ocean. He thought, well, they'll never find her. Of course they fucking found her and unearthed her. And it's like, is this Imhotep?
Now she all mad.
Yeah, she's pissed off. It's like Imhotep's back, you know, sort of thing. Yeah, the first one was probably, as I recall, Pat, better than it had any right to be, if I'm remembering our reviews of it.
Yeah, our expectations were thoroughly low.
Yeah.
I remember expectations being low. Let's also credit where credit is due. Charlize Theron and Uma Thurman both look like they still got the fighting chops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some Kill Bill Volume 3 going on in this, which we haven't had yet. But
And I also would love for there to be like some sort of quirky dance routine in the middle of that fight, just out of nowhere. You know, we're just don't want to.
I'm down with it. I'm down with it. Yeah, this looks, I mean, you know, and I want my knee jerk reaction is like, did we really need this? But then I think back, you know, Old Guard 1 was way better than we thought it was going to be. So let's give this one a chance and see how they deliver, because the first one did deliver on many surprising fronts.
You know who was a huge fan of the Old Guard, the original? Yeah, PC Tony. I heard he watched it like six times.
He did.
He watched The Old Guard almost as many times as Ray Cash watched Flash Gordon.
44 and a half.
So I've right. never seen the first one.
No, that's I not like, true.
I'm we a big just... fan of I'm a big fan of Charlize Theron and Uma Thurman, but and it looks fun. I mean the action looks good. I don't know if fun's the right word. It's a little bit more serious kind of thing. But I just not for me. If Charlize and Uma would like to get together privately, I mean, I'd be happy to cook breakfast the next day. So
yeah. Well, fine. I believed in you, and then said you didn't see the Old Guard Part One. Okay.
I've been just
ran like with a bit, man.
Like a lot
just
of
gone with the bit.
Like a lot of ex girlfriends, this smile and laugh won't turn into concern until those rivers fill this room, or those tears fill this room with a river.
Fair enough. All right. Well, you mentioned, you know, you're not really keen on seeing the Old Guard 2. I'm not keen on seeing this next movie myself. We are getting our final Conjuring film with Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. Some people love these films. Some people hate them. I mean, for me, this firmly lands in the realm of fine for me when it comes to horror. Like, they're exorcism films that have spawned all kinds of ghost story spinoffs. You know, without The Conjuring, we don't have The Nun, we don't have Annabelle, we don't have all of these other sort of, like, it's made a boatload of money. This is allegedly the last Conjuring, The Conjuring Last Rites. And here's how little this movie interests me. I watched this trailer and it just feels like every other Conjuring film that's ever been put out there. Something's haunted. It's the quote, biggest, most scariest, dangerous haunting of all time. Except this one is the one that caused them to stop. And again, we get to follow the Warren family, which, by the way, folks, if you ever want to read some fun shit, learn about how the Warren family were a bunch of crocs, like, because they were scam artists. But I mean, if you're a big Warren fan, you know, just like Dave, the truth is out there. Except it wasn't. They were crocs. But
yeah, this they truth loved, of, this truth maybe not so much.
Well, they're like any other psychic, or a lot of psychics. They like to use the technique of blind reading, where they basically take advantage of the cues given to them by the person that claims that they're haunted, to then, you know, run with whatever's done. So it's like, you know, I'm feeling somebody who has an A in their name. Well, that's so easy. And then all of a sudden that person, you know, blurts out, my grandma's name was Jan. Well, okay, now we're talking to your grandma Jan. Like, that's cold reading. So
wait, are you telling me that Oda Mae Brown was full of shit and ghost? Is that what you're telling me?
She was totally full of shit. Patrick Swayze was not really there the whole time. Right. She was just telling Demi Moore what she wants. Dave, I'm gonna keep crapping on The Conjuring unless you want to crap on The Conjuring or at least talk about it. I have no interest. Tony loves horror movies so much he's decided to pass on his comments for this one because he knows that we know how much he loves them.
Some of the Conjuring movies have been good. I mean, there's some creepy moments. There's some stuff in The Nun that's creepy and Annabelle and stuff. And this looks like a greatest hits sort of compilation. Let's throw the entire universe into one movie and claim that this is why they had to quit because all these things came after them. I don't know. It looks like kind of harmless fun sort of situation if you like this kind of stuff. I know Tony hates it, but yeah, whatever. I mean, maybe I'll check it out one of these decades, but it's not really high up on my list of gotta see this sort of situation. So
I don't think it's on any. Like, I know it has a following. We're just not that following. We need, you know who we need on this show for this? We need Ray. Like, Ray's a big fan of horror these movies, and so
they've got like a Conjuring Haunted Maze at Six Flags for Fright Fest now, and that's probably one of the better ones, and it's just a bitch to get into, but I mean,
dude, you know what I want to do over at Universal? I want to go check out that Dungeons and Dragons thing they got for After Hours, man. That thing looks awesome. So yeah, cool. Oh, a post-apocalyptic / horror film I am interested in is the latest film based on a work by Stephen King called The Long Walk. This is a story that takes place in what appears to be a dystopian future where teenage boys, mostly, like, or young adult, teenage to maybe early 20s tops boys, volunteer to participate in a contest where you literally walk, and everybody walks until no one can until everybody physically drops and there's one person remains, and that person gets a big reward. And the rules are pretty simple. You have to maintain a 3-mile-an-hour pace. You are given 3 warnings. After the 3rd warning, if you do not resume, you are shot and killed. And they are followed by a tank and some military guys. And the imagery in this trailer is just bleak and harrowing all the way through. As they, you know, these boys, it starts off, and these boys are joking around like you would see late teens to early 20-somethings doing. And then as the walk proceeds and progresses and things start to get real and serious, you see the audience and the different ways that they witness them as they walk by. You see the kids as they start to realize, I'm not going to be the one to finish this, and how they act. And this trailer looks made this film look heavy. Does not look like it's going to be a fun, like, hey, let's be cheerful afterwards. Looks like a very bleak Stephen King story in the veins of the original Mist. And I'm here for it. I think this thing looks phenomenal. I'm all in. So, Tony, you actually dropped the microphone for this one. So what did you think of this trailer, bud?
It's interesting. It's when did King, is this a book he wrote, or did he just come up with the concept?
I'm not sure if it's a book or a novel. It's either a book or a short story. He's okay. Really gotten into
how long
writing
ago
short
did he,
stories a lot more.
Is this a recent or older?
Let me look.
Because what I'm looking like, too, Kat. Is this, oh. Does this inspire the things that have happened recently that are close to this, or is this inspired by things that have happened recently? Like,
this was a novel written in 1979.
Okay,
wrote it under the pseudonym of Richard Bachman.
One of his Bachman books.
This feels like it'd be an inspiration for the creators of like Hunger Games and Suicide. What's the other one? The third season's coming out now.
Last of Us.
Squid Game.
Yeah, it seemed like this would be inspiration for the creators of those things then.
Yeah, way ahead of his time on this one.
Right? That's like a kind of like a basis for that. I feel like those, you know, I wondered what inspired what. Obviously, you know, Stephen King's inspired a lot of these kind of things that have happened like that. Purge, etc.
So the American Library Association listed The Long Walk as one of the 100 best books for teenage readers published between 1966 and 2000. That's impressive. The fact that King wrote this in 79 is really it's definitely eye opening a little bit, because, and he did it under his pen name, and I think he's done a few, like, wasn't Thinner done under Bachman as well? I think was one of the ones that he did. Watching this, I mean, I don't know how you felt, Pat, but this looked like a really dark, fucked up version of Stand By Me, right? Elements of that where the long walk is going on and there's some stuff really happening, but whew, this one I definitely want to check out, because nobody, you know, and I know there's other great horror authors out there, don't get me wrong, but for my money, nobody tells a story like Stephen King does. And this looks like it's got all the elements to be something truly epic. And I love horror like this. The slasher stuff, that's fine. That's great. This quiet, right, psychological sort of stuff that gets in your head and stays there, like Pet Sematary, like The Stand, that sort of thing. That's my favorite kind of horror, and nobody does it better than King. So I'm all in on this one.
Yeah, me too. I actually may even show this trailer to the little O'Dowd as he's kind of getting more and more interested in horror and dystopian stuff. This may be something that he finds interesting and maybe an opportunity for a film that he wants to check out, as I've really grown to appreciate how much he's taking an interest in more mature subject matter.
What
as he's gotten older.
What grade is he finishing right now?
Wrapping up 7th grade. He'll be in 8th grade next year.
That checks. That tracks.
Yeah. So that's been something that's been going on for about a year or so now. Is you know, more mature. Like, he went and saw The Amateur with me, not because I forced him, but because he was like, this looks interesting, I want to see it. So, and that's sort of where we've been going with stuff. All right, last but not least, we got our first full look, a full trailer for the series Peacemaker Season 2. Our good friend John Cena back in the saddle as the Peacemaker once again. And so here's the thing. Hijinks and story behind Season 2, I felt like took such a secondary backseat to his interview that kicks off this trailer, where he goes in. And there is one Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner interviewing Peacemaker for what we can only assume is Justice League or Justice Society of America, and making fun of him because, well, he, and I don't know who the woman is or who she's supposed to be. I didn't look or was not keen enough to know. I just know that he's sitting there in this interview. They have intercoms and mics that are supposed to be quiet behind glass. They keep the mic on and they proceed to just rip on Peacemaker and how he's just a joke and a loser and totally worthless while he can still hear. And he replies to it. We're obviously going to watch this just like we did season one. I can't imagine we won't enjoy this just like we did in season one. This season two does seem to have a little bit more heart involved as they try to, Peacemaker and his team try to get some credibility and some recognition, even after saving the world once and not getting any love for it, hoping that the second time around, whatever they end up doing, maybe gets them the respect they deserve. Dave, I believe you shared this one out, so I'll hand it over to you to talk on your thoughts on the Peacemaker season two trailer.
Oh yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I love it. And you get to see right away the connection that Gunn is making to like Creature Commandos and all the other stuff, the Superman movie and that sort of thing. So,
yeah,
because, you know, like Rick Flagg Sr. is going to be coming, is going to be coming after Peacemaker for killing his son. And it's like, he knows I killed his son, right? Yeah. But, you know, yeah, you've got Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. You got Isabella Merced is coming back. She's in this as Hawk Girl. And I mean, if you're we'll talk Last of Us more when you get to what you're watching, but she's killing it in that show as well. The question is, which version of Hawk Girl is she playing? No one's really sure whether it's Kendra Saunders, whether it's, some of the other iterations of Hawk Girl that we've seen. But yeah, this looks really good. This looks like maybe a bit more of a serious tone that they're going to take with Peacemaker season two in the wake of, you know, by this time this comes out, Superman will be done. And I don't know chronologically whether this hits before or after Superman. But the first season was so good, and now Gunn's got his hands fully invested in this. I think this second season will be just as phenomenal. And we get the last real world champion involved as well, so it's all good.
Honey, pumped for Peacemaker season two?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it seems so long ago. AJ and Andrew and I, we actually covered this on Pod is War and had a really good time doing it. The first season is just so good comedically. But let's put Grok to work. Why not? And let me lay out some stuff and ask you guys that hasn't been brought up, because I said, what Easter eggs are in the Peacemaker 2 trailer? I had seen a thread on X that had like 10 to 12 of them as well. You guys mentioned the Justice League International vibes, right? Already. They kind of bring that up. You guys, Maxwell Lord, we see here, and the Lord, a lot of Lord tech, right?
We're going to talk about Maxwell Lord a little bit later. So,
okay.
Yes. And hold that thought a little bit.
Guy Gardner and Hawk Girl, you guys already brought up. Rick Flagg and Argus. Did you guys talk about the pocket dimension where there's two Peacemakers?
We did not talk about the end of the trailer, no. So go for it.
I'm just going to keep going down. You can come back to that one. But you got Langston Fleury, Tim Meadows' character, Sasha Bordeaux. They mentioned specifically a reduced visual appearance or possible role for Vigilante. Here we don't really see him. They talk about the Superman connection. You know, you mentioned Maxwell Lord, Guy Gardner, Hawk Girl, etc. I do believe there's going to be Jitters here as well, which is like a DC centrally located, like that's Starbucks. Every place has a Jitters, you know.
Right.
The Batman reference is kind of vague and speculative. Then you got Eagly and Peacemaker's gear out there as well. So ever changing. One of the coolest things I seen was John Cena came on Inside the NBA on TNT with Chuck and Kenny and Shaq and Ernie, and they all put on a helmet, and then Chuck and Shaq had an impromptu wrestling match where John Cena counted three as Shaq pinned Chuck. So it's just a fun series, and the fact that before leading up to the premiere of the first series, John Cena like for a week went out and did everything in his Peacemaker uniform, I think like he loves that character. I love that for him, and I hope he's a big part of DCU moving forward. Why shouldn't he be? I just, it's great that he is so effective and good at what he does in Hollywood, because we get to continue to be John Cena's fans, right? As his in-ring career wraps up, where we first got to know him and love him and appreciate him, I really am and continuing to grow more and more in like with his acting career and the projects he's doing. So kudos to John Cena. Big fan.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they're going with those with that interdimensional travel, like the portal walkthrough thing that was clearly, you know, designed to be like, oh my gosh, what's going on here, to get people enticed. I do want to talk about the vigilante thing, because it's like people have fundamentally forgotten what happens in trailers. And that is, like, I don't think vigilante has a reduced role. I think he wasn't very involved in this trailer, and we'll see more of him later. He was too much of a breakout star for them to not have him be a prominent part of the second season. So all you people, Brock included, relax. Vigilante's coming. He'll be here. Like, he was too much of a positive part of the show to not be. It's just part of the trailer. He was in the trailer as much as the rest of the team was, in my opinion, which were all briefly really kind of glossed over. So I'm not too worried about that. Dave, are you worried about Vigilante?
No, not really. There's going to be so much going on with season two. I feel like season two will be probably significantly bigger in scope than season one was, just because of all the things that will come before that, you know, and all the tie-ins and, you know, I'm just, honestly, I'm wondering, do we get more characters from Creature Commando showing up in live action? Like, do we get the bride? Do we get Frankenstein, David Harbour, that sort of thing? So yeah, I doubt it, Dave.
You're doing that nerd thing where you think more is going to show up than really what's going to happen. This never happens in Marvel. It never happens in any of these things. They're going to be in an episode, maybe tops.
What character did Alan Tudyk play in Creature Commandos again? I forgot.
He was
Dr. Phosphorus.
Yeah.
Okay, I could see Alan Tudyk playing a significant role in at least one movie as Dr. Phosphorus, because they've talked about transferring the voices from live action and animated. So if they do something with Dr. Phosphorus, I don't know why you wouldn't grab Alan Tudyk, you know? So just like on like the most likely one, I think that is, because I feel like they have plans for someone there.
Here's my thing. And I just want to, I want to point this out. I'm not saying that other characters from other DCU property, Frank Grillo, obviously he's the voice of what's his name? Flag. Obviously, there's crossover and there's connection. I just think that fans get so, like, in their head that, like, everybody and their brother is going to be in this series as a crossover. Like, maybe the Creature Commandos get mentioned. Maybe one of them passes by. But just like the Guy Gardner Hawk Girl thing, it's one scene in the series to let you know that the cinematic universe is connected. And that's going to kind of be it. Like, I think the Frank Grillo thing will be in more than one or two episodes because there's a real connection there. But I think that's going to be it. I don't think you're going to see much of the rest of the Creature Commandos. You might hear mentioned or tell of them, but I don't think it's going to be what folks may speculate it to be. That's just me.
I know we didn't cover the first season here.
Yeah.
Are you opposed to picking up in season two or no?
Only if the other show doesn't want to do it, because they did season one. So if they don't want to do season two and they are willing to let us take it, we'll take it. I think they took it because we were covering something else at the time.
Well, the guy who pushed them covering it is right here with us, so he can make it.
It's me.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, like, so, in fairness, I would never stomp on another show's work.
Plus, you never know,
Tony. Season four could be going by then, and we have to cover The Witcher season four.
There you go, buddy.
Here's the thing. I'll put it to you one of two ways. If AJ Balazs gets back on first shift by the time this comes out, then that show will probably cover it. If he doesn't, I think it'd be cool, because we always start the show by covering the show we're covering, to just invite Andrew and AJ on for a half hour every week while we're covering it, if you're okay with that. I don't think that would really, you know, be too horrible. But just thoughts on the air. Listen, folks, there is no other place on the entirety of the chair shot realm that I am less in charge than when it comes to Bandwagon Nerds. And I'm okay with that, and I'm happy with that dynamic. So you can quietly smile, Patrick. It's fine.
The Iron Fist of Patrick O'Dowd. All right, we're going to take our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go back and revisit the Thunderbolts / New Avengers and talk a little DC news, a little follow up. So yes, that is in your future. So stick around for that. We're having a great time here. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of ChairShot.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, a part of TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Make sure you head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/ChairShot to get some sweet, sweet ChairShot swag. Get it soft style for a few dollars more on that $19.99 price tag and get it soft style. It'll feel great on your giblets, and it helps us keep going on a daily basis. That's right, a daily basis. Gentlemen, I was not here last week.
Nope.
When you all got to have the joy. It was literally the two of you.
Yep.
talking Thunderbolts / New Avengers. And so, yes.
Before you, I can't wait to hear your thoughts, right, and your take. But I just want people to know that the two other people that are on this show that are, well, one's almost never here, and the other one's here majority of the time. Ray got to voice his thoughts on Pod is War, so if you want to hear his thoughts, go back and listen to that. And DP got to voice his thoughts on DWI last week, so go ahead and listen to that. Patrick, thank you for letting me update people on that.
Yeah, and so last weekend was a specific weekend with me spending a lot of time with the little old town. We went and saw Thunderbolts on Saturday last week, and then on Sunday, when we were recording the podcast, I had taken him to a special 50th anniversary screening of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. We had a great time. It was a wonderful time with my son. He loves Monty Python, loves that brand of humor. I secretly think he might be British. I'm not sure, because I think he finds British humor funnier than American comedy sometimes.
Blimey.
Something like that. But we did go, you know, see Thunderbolts, New Avengers, and we enjoyed it thoroughly. You know, I think I heard Dave gave it like something like an 8.5 out of 10, 8, somewhere there. Tony was in the same realm. Both of you, you know, ranked it very, very high. I would rank it very, very high. I would argue that it is probably the best film output that Marvel has made in at least the last 3 years, as far as the stuff that has shown up in the theaters.
Since you're on that point, Patrick, Dave and I, yeah, I think we both, I think I gave it 8.5, and Dave's like, yeah, I think that's, Dave was like, yeah, eight, yeah, I can give it an 8.5. So Dave's like right there. We both said it's the best thing since Guardians 3, but it's not as good as Guardians 3, right, Dave? Am I correct on that? Was our kind of our assertion?
Yeah, I would have, I think, you know, a week later thinking about it, Guardians 3.
A little bit better, just a little.
No, yeah, a little bit better. I think No Way Home is still better than Thunderbolts was, but I'd probably put it third. I'd probably put it a notch ahead of Wakanda Forever as far as, you know, as far as Phase 6, which really just started. It's easily the best movie of that batch, but I'd say third since Endgame.
So where do you rank it like that, Patrick, and number do you put on it?
It's interesting because I liked it more than Wakanda Forever. Wakanda Forever was quite good. I think Guardians of the Galaxy, it's hard to put it up against Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 just because that movie had a two movie lead. to build and establish. I think if you were to put it up against the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I would make it better than the original Guardians of the Galaxy, because I think both of those movies achieved the same goal, and that was to familiarize an audience and attach them to a group of adventure or heroes that they're not necessarily as connected or attached to. Because a lot of the movie-going audience, I'm willing to bet or argue, didn't watch Captain America and the Winter Soldier, didn't watch the Black Widow movie or Hawkeye. Like, I think that there was a lot of unfamiliarity with those folks. Maybe you had a tangential understanding of Ghost just because you watched the Ant-Man movies. So in terms of like where I put it, yeah, I don't know that I would call it as good as those two. However, I also think the runway is a little different for Thunderbolts versus Guardians 3. And so I think that, you know, if we get a second Thunderbolts movie or a new Avengers movie or whatever they call it, it's got an opportunity to take it someplace. I was just really impressed that this movie attacked trauma again. And that's been a kind of a theme going through a lot of these movies of late, has been sort of the trauma of our past and how we manage and navigate that. Even Guardians 3 is all about Raccoon Rocket dealing with the traumas of his past and coming to terms with them with the High Evolutionary, or, you know, Peter Quill reconciling his past and his familial connections with his grandfather and coming to grips with like his sister and all of that. So I think that's very much been a Marvel theme. I think that it was without question. I mean, I know this is going to come as a surprise, but Florence Pugh was in this movie and she was quite good. Wait, who, so I know that's news.
Who?
Florence Pugh, you know, famous actress, Florence Pugh, stunning. But for my money, a very pleasant highlight to this film was David Harbour and was Red Guardian. And when Little O'Dowd walked out of the film and like proclaimed, "We are the Thunderbolts," in the film or in the theater, like that tells you when somebody has nailed the character, and he absolutely nailed the character. And so I know Marvel definitely has a hit on their hands. I'll be interested to see how far it goes. I hope it goes as far as we believe it can. I think it's going to make a ton of money. I'll be interested to see how the box office turns out this week. I don't even know what came out this week. Did anything significant come out this week to compete with it that we're aware of? So it should have a pretty strong second weekend, given that, you know, that this is weekend number two and there doesn't really seem to be anything particularly massive to go up against it. Listening back to the program, when I listen to you guys talk about the show and getting Ray's thoughts, the semantics as to whether or not Captain America, Sam, already has a new team or is gathering a new team, it doesn't matter. Like, it absolutely doesn't matter.
Matters, okay? It fucking matters to us, Patrick, goddammit.
Well, that's because we're nerds, and that's what nerds take a lot of pride in being correct. I understand this. I am somebody who takes a lot of pride in being correct. So, and yes, Tuddy, you too also take a lot of pride in being correct. Dave, you take a lot of pride in being correct, except for when you talk about your sports team. And then you're always wrong. See, your team is in the goddamn Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah,
shut up.
My football team made the NFC Championship. They all suck. It's all over.
That's true. Anyhow, it doesn't matter because I know you, Dave, you had read off a little bit of our conversation. I have no doubt that the story that'll be told by the Russos with regards to the Avengers versus the new Avengers will be entertaining. I have faith in their filmmaking ability to do that. The story is not on my particular, as you would call, playlist of a story angle I want to see, in that I don't need another plot point of two sets of good guys that are part of the quote unquote same team in conflict with each other over who's right and who's more good than the other. Like, I just don't want or need that. And I think it's a silly thing to throw in an effort to be like, well, we're the Avengers. No, we're the Avengers. We're going to fight over who's the Avengers. And do I think it's going to get to the level of Civil War 2? No. But like, Nobody cares, or nobody needs to care. It doesn't need to be a plot point when you're introducing Victor Von Doom, when you're introducing Secret Wars and the Beyonder. So it's just, it feels like a redux. And I don't love that it feels like a redux and a redo of a plot point and a strategy that they've used in the past. This is an element of new that I would hope that they would bring in. And so that was my ultimate issue with the post-credits tag. Other than that, I feel like it did everything right. And even with the whole like conflict between the new Avengers versus, you know, Sam's team of Avengers, like even that little conflict, like whatever. And folks, for those of you wondering, the Sam Wilson team of Avengers will feel very similar to the new Avengers. There will be one super powerhouse, and there will be a lot of other characters that are kind of relatable heroes, a la Ant-Man, a la even a Shuri, who for all of her, you know, skills and talents and powers, because she's, you know, drank of the flower, she's still a human. Like, she's a super soldier. It's going to be a lot of that. It's not going to be Thor, Captain Marvel, and Doctor Strange rolling through that door on Sam's side. It'll be Falcon, Captain America, a Black Panther, Ant-Man, and then Thor. Like, those would be the ones. So, good stuff. Good overall film. And I just, I think that they hit a home run. So, and I think that, you know, looking at the numbers as being shared on a whiteboard in front of me, they're well on their way to another strong weekend. So, good deal for the new Avengers. I did want to talk about a couple of other things and bring you guys back into the conversation, though, with some fun stuff that we learned over this ensuing week. And the first is, I don't know how you guys felt, but my buddy Matt, who texted me after seeing the movie, was like, man, they did Taskmaster kind of dirty. And he's not wrong. Taskmaster shows up in the opening scene and gets shot unceremoniously in the head by Ghost and is dead, and that is it for her. And there's no real sense of loss. Well, in an interview given shortly after the film was released, we learned that the scriptwriter of the Thunderbolts actually had written, Eric Pearson, had actually written quite a story arc for Taskmaster. And then she was dead. And he was just surprised for it. And it sounds like her role was to kind of be a connective tissue and a partner and a sort of shared experience character with Ghost, which would have maybe given her character a little bit more to do and a little more depth and dynamic. I was actually really interested in this article. And I wonder, without speculating as to why Taskmaster is gone, or even if he even missed her, what would you have thought of a stronger Taskmaster role where we actually get to know that character beyond what we knew of her in the Black Widow film, which wasn't very much, and is someone who connected with another member of the team? Dave, you nodded, so I'm going to pick on you first.
I mean, I would have liked to have seen her stick around. You know, the power set that she has, the mimicry ability, could have been really interesting to see how that would have kind of meshed with what Sentry and Void were doing, that sort of thing. So I liked her as a character in the Black Widow movie. I was, you know, and I know we kind of predicted it in the Deadpool that she'd be gone early because she doesn't show up in one of the director chairs. But I mean, Marvel's done that in the past, killing off characters that you think are integral to the story arc really early on. I'm looking at you, Crossbones, sort of thing. But, you know, I would have liked to seen her stick around for a while. I think there could have been a compelling story to tell with her. And I think, you know, she adds an element to that team that they don't otherwise have. So I would have been cool with it. I kind of get why they did it, but then again, I kind of don't. This seems like a waste. Why do we even bring her in for 30 seconds of action and then that's it? It's like when in Wedding Planners, right? Where he's talking to Chaz about the guy hang gliding. Hey, look at me, I'm hang gliding and I'm dead. You know, that sort of thing. So that's kind of what it felt like with Taskmaster.
Absolutely. Tony, were you sad that the Taskmaster was done dirty?
No, not at all. I knew someone was going to die. So like it was her or like Ghost, right? Survived. So like, yeah, right. I thought it was going to be one of the two. You know, I think Ray had hit this on the head in the Deadpool, by the way. And good on him. Somebody had to go, and it had to be somebody. Listen, I thought the way Thunderbolt started to put those people in that predicament was a really fun way to start the movie. So, you know.
It was, and it did build to where we needed to go with who was pulling the strings. All right. One other fascinating story that I think came out of the same interview with Eric Pearson was that we almost got the return of Daniel Brühl's Baron Zemo, and that it was going to be Baron Zemo as a part of the Thunderbolts as somebody who had sort of reverted back to his villainous ways and was initially in early drafts of the film pulling strings from prison before going and be involved in this Thunderbolt story. Now, for those of you who don't know, Baron Zemo does have a history with the Thunderbolts. He has been somebody who's led the Thunderbolts or worked with them before. So this would have been an interesting take, and it would have certainly been a direction they could have taken. I like the direction they went instead. And the argument was, you know, with Yelena Belova and her being manipulated in a different way by, gosh, why am I forgetting her name? Julie Louis Dreyfus's character's name. Drink.
Val.
Valentina. Yeah, Allegra. And don't forget the D, because that's not the Secretary of Defense. It's the Secretary of Defense.
DeFontaine.
Okay.
DeFontaine.
That terrible accent was brought to you by Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, or at Chairshot.com.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father.
That's not even the right movie anymore.
Prepare to Valentina Allegra DeFontaine.
I think we need Mandy Patinkin in a MCU film. That's what I just heard.
Hashtag six fingers.
I hope we get Daniel Brühl back in the MCU in some way, shape, or form. I don't know that this is where they needed to bring him back, and I'm okay with him not. But I think Baron Zemo has a lot of possibilities that they want to use him as a top, maybe not a top tier villain, but a 1A tier villain. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think bringing Zemo into Thunderbolts would have been like one misfit too many sort of situation. And they probably didn't need that. But I do hope we get Zemo back in some form or fashion. Whether he's dancing or not doesn't matter. But I think I want to get Zemo back involved because he is he's a charismatic character. He's very calculating. He's got all that manipulative stuff. And I think, just Zemo. Is whether, you know, you're going to do some, especially if we're going to get like an alternate version of Cap, who's Hail Hydra. You got to, Zemo's his right hand man. You got to get him involved for that, right?
Maybe. We'll have to see. Tony, anything to add? Do you want more Baron Zemo? Do you miss terms? All right, let's move into our last little segment before we head into our commercial break. We learned this week, and it was mentioned in the Peacemaker trailer, we got to see a little bit of Maxwell Lord. Well, it has been revealed that Sean Gunn is going to be cast as the next Maxwell Lord. And he talked a lot about trying not to step on the toes of the Pedro Pascal character and those comparisons. I thought this is an interesting choice. You know, James's brother, I think Sean could pull it off. I just can't see him as anything other than Graglin from Guardians of the Galaxy. But Maxwell Lord's kind of a goofy character. What do you think, Tony? I'll start with you. What do you think of this casting of James Gunn as the next Maxwell Lord in Sean Gunn in James Gunn's DCU as Maxwell Lord?
I feel like they tried to get Pedro, and he just can't do it with what he's got going on. He's like he's one of the most booked people in the entire world, right? Like, and successful with everything's going on. And he thought, who do I trust? And because I would imagine he probably had a couple of different characters he wanted his brother to play, you know, but I believe in Sean Gunn. I think he's a great actor. And I don't think there's any reason. I feel like something significant instantly as he portrays this character, you're going to forget everything else you know him as. Like I think they easily give him, you know, that type of mechanism to flip your personal feelings on how he plays a character. So I'm excited to see it. I'm okay with it. It needed to be somebody important, somebody that can pull it off. And I think he can do it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it because I think this Maxwell Lord will be very different from the one we saw in Wonder Woman 1984, which really wasn't the Maxwell Lord that I'm used to. So, yeah, distancing yourself from Pedro and introducing a different sort of character, a different version of Maxwell Lord, because he's very integral to the DC universe most of the other time. So I'm cool with it. This actor can go. And like Tony said, it's somebody that James Gunn can trust. Can't trust your own brother. Who can you trust? So, yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, as you guys mentioned, I think Sean Gunn, hell of an actor, will be perfectly fine within that role. Okay, we are going to take our second commercial break, and we come back. We got a couple of big pieces of news that happened in the entertainment industry, one from Disney and one from the White House. So stay tuned for that. We will be right back. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. PC Tunney, David Ungar, Patrick O'Dowd, talking to you about all of the biggest news in the nerdosphere. And ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot. Get that swag. Two huge, huge stories broke this week in the world of entertainment. We're going to start with, and both of them are controversial. And so I'm going to encourage feelings about entities be put aside, and we just talk about the stories themselves. And what they mean, looking at you, Ungar, looking at you, O'Dowd, just look at both of us. Tunney, it's all Star Wars, so I'm not really worried about Tunney. It's all Star Wars.
Even though he's not watching the best Star Wars of all time.
But what's hilarious here, can we just talk about the guy who shared this first story was PC Tunney in the Bandwagon Nerds chat. Now, we talked about it off. I intentionally didn't share this in the Bandwagon Nerds chat because I genuinely was like, nobody's going to want to talk about this except for Pat and Dave. And that may still be true. But I was like, nobody's going to be interested in Dave and I talking back and forth. But it was announced this week that so Disney did its quarterly, you know, review, its annual stockholders report, all that fun stuff. And as part of that, Disney announced plans to build and open a new theme park, a new Walt Disney theme park. Now, this is something that has been speculated about for years, but I think the location was a bit of a surprise as it was announced that the theme park will be opened in the United Arab Emirates capital of Abu Dhabi in collaboration with the regional developer Myral Group, and it will be the first new Disney park built in a decade and the first Disney park in the Middle East. So to say that there are Disney people out there that have feelings about this park being built, where it's being built, I do want to start with a couple of things that are very, very important and have been pointed out by Bob Iger and Josh Amaro. Disney is not really putting money into this. Disney is putting in intellectual property and innovation. And I think that's an important distinguisher to make, because one of the big complaints I've seen a lot of people say is that, you know, Disney has all this money set aside and they're not going to spend it on parks in the United States or over here. They're going to Abu Dhabi to build this park. And that's not entirely true. Like, yes, there will be some money involved in Disney, but most of it is going to be actually put up by the Merrill Group, which are known for building theme parks and technological innovations. From a Disney perspective, this makes a ton of sense because you know what it's going to do? It's going to bring in a ton of money to both the Mural Park people and Disney. The day after this announcement was made, Disney stock jumped like 10 points the day trading opened. So it's no mistake why this is happening. What's been really interesting about all of this is a lot of what the other thing that a lot of Disney fans have had trouble reconciling with is Disney's statements about inclusion, about being for everyone, and seemingly getting into bed with a nation and a company that, one, just to be blunt, not very friendly to the lesbian, gay, transgender population. And two, isn't exactly known for the strongest of labor laws for people that do their work there. And so some Disney folks feel icky. The park itself, like it's interesting to me because the mock-ups of what this park could look like, it doesn't look like a Disney park to me at all. Like the castle is like the first quote unquote modern castle. And that's always the hallmark. It looks like a damn crystal in the middle of the desert. And it's that's interesting to me as a Disney fan. But I understand why this would be a location. This is a place that connects something like a quarter of the world's population based on being a hub of transportation. So in both Africa, Asia, and Europe. So from that end, like, I see why Disney is interested in building this park and making the money to make it happen. On the other side, I understand why there is a significant portion of folks that are uncomfortable with it. But Disney's also built a park in Shanghai. They've also built a park in Hong Kong. And those locations also aren't exactly known for being the most, let's just say, worker-friendly or inclusive. So I'm going to turn it over first to the other Disney park enthusiast, if that's okay with you, Tunny, and go with Dave and comment on these. I can see the outrage already. Big Disney fan that you are. Dave, your thoughts on this announcement of Walt Disneyland. It'll be Disneyland Abu Dhabi is what they're saying will be the official name. So your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Disney's making a boatload of money on this and not really expending as much as, if they put the park somewhere else and had it be like the fully didn't. And that's not to say this won't be the fully Disney branded experience. I think it will up to a point. And I think, like, talking with my wife about this, the thing that she's most concerned about is, like, and you said, Saudi Arabia, not the most progressive country as far as certain things go. And how does that fit in with the Disney princesses, right? Because they have until recently, and WWE, kudos to them, was one of the big companies that kind of started to break down those barriers a little bit with the women's matches. But still, they aren't exactly, the Disney princesses have a certain sort of look and feel and mannerism to them, and will Saudi Arabia embrace that right off the bat? Probably not, which is going to raise some interesting questions for them, as far as how inclusive do they want to be? How progressive do they want to be? They have to know that, look, we've got to, and maybe this is more of Saudi Arabia's attempt to get more modernized and to get that inclusion and to be a little bit more progressive and forward thinking. And maybe, like, this is the best way to do it. But like you're saying, it's a massive hub in this part of the world where there is nothing. And you look at countries around the world that are just exploding with growth and stuff like, Saudi Arabia is one of them, Riyadh and all those places. So this kind of does make sense. And, honestly, some of the most well-regarded Disney parks are not the ones in California or Florida. Disney Sea is generally regarded by most as the best Disney park that there is. And that's over in Tokyo now. Sure, Tokyo is more progressive than other places. But I think it makes a lot of sense. And like you said, the backlash, and like my son was one of them, was like, look, they need to invest more money in the existing parks and fix those up and do the things that they've announced as far as adding things to Florida, adding things to, California, which is in the works. But I know a lot of people wanted a fifth park in Florida. They're not getting that right now. But I think overall it makes a ton of sense financially for Disney to be doing this, and it creates a bigger world footprint for Disney. Now they're expanding over to the Middle East and Africa and that sort of thing. So right. Yeah, I get it.
And I think the money is more than right when you consider how little they actually are paying to make this, to build this park.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, they repeatedly talked about how much they're not spending to make this park.
And really, I mean, as a big Disney fan like you are, Pat, I mean, the fact that they're going to make a park that looks different, may feel a little bit different, but still has that Disney experience, I'm not bothered by that at all. Okay, we get a different castle. All the castles are different and unique in their own way. And that's kind of what makes, this will be the seventh one that we get. So I'm like, yeah, let's see what they come up with.
Yeah, I go back and forth. Here's the other thing. I'm never going to. Like, I'm never going there. I'm never traveling there ever in my life. Like, I mean, I say never, and maybe never may, and never say never is something I should be doing. I don't see myself ever making myself making my way over to Saudi Arabia to go to the Disney park. I just don't.
Yeah, but will Miss O'Dowd book a surprise trip there that you're just like, I guess I'm going.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think she, no, we're too white for that place. Like, we'll burn. Like, we will turn into cinders in the sun. I do think it's interesting. You know, one of the arguments I hear all the time is, oh, they're doing all this stuff to be more progressive. They're doing this to make themselves more palatable to a global audience. A lot of times it's why I like, sure, it's great that they're letting women wrestle in Saudi Arabia. Awesome. How is the country actually changing outside of that bubble? And the question is, they're not really, and they don't have to, because they can be like, look what we're doing. And so that is the other conflict. And they were, and again, it's also the rights of workers. You know, that company is known for basically creating such a contractual situation for their laborers that is glorified indentured servitude.
Well, yeah.
And like
you're saying,
you know, that's problematic.
You're saying you'd never go over there. And there's going to be a lot of people who are like, you know, especially if you're female and you're like, I'm not going over there and wearing all this shit just to get in the park. Fuck that. I don't need to do that. I'll just go to Paris.
I'm just not going to go because it's fucking Saudi Arabia. I don't know. I'm never going to make it to Disneyland Paris. The only international park that I hope to get to, maybe I'll go to Disneyland Paris. I won't shoot that one out of the water. But you talked about the two Tokyo Disney parks. Yeah. Like, the little O'Dowd's dream is to go to Tokyo for a vacation. I would love to make that happen for him. If we made that happen for him, part of our vacation would absolutely be going to Tokyo Disneyland, Tokyo Disney Sea. Like, you just have to. So, but from an international global footprint for Disney, Tony, I'm sure you can agree with this. Like, it makes a ton of sense for Disney.
That's one of the biggest things. And you guys brought up the financial situation. That area of the world has brought Western culture in as they please and picked and chose what they wanted. I don't sure if it was UFC or WWE first, but they both did it before the TKO merger. So there's that. LIV Golf as well is over there. There's just so much money. Like, I've told you this before. I lean a little right because of a smaller government kind of thing. I've voted Democrat many times. So I'm kind of a centralist for the most part. But I like to listen to Joe Rogan once in a while or watch clips when he has different people on. And they're talking about how rich that part of the country is. They're like, oh, we don't like that it doesn't rain. So they seed the clouds. That's how fucking rich they are. Like, do you want to know the difference between a million and a billion? A million seconds is 11 days. A billion seconds is 31 years. Do you start to get the difference between a million and a billion? And we're not talking about billionaires. These are trillionaires in that area of the country. So it's a completely different level. And that's why a Disney park there would look futuristic, right? But I do have to argue for the fact that as Western culture comes in, it may be at a snail's pace, but at least it's there with a presence for progress and change. So it's something. The most likely person to visit this would be DP, who for work has been to Dubai and Riyadh, I believe. So there you go.
He's nice. Got all that disposable income, too.
That's summon a bitch. True.
All right, let's go to the other big story. This story actually broke a week ago from when we were recording this. I remember posting this late in the day after I'd gotten back from the Monty Python thing and sort of shaking my head. And this story has already changed at least a couple of times. But Donald Trump took to Truth Social last Sunday, so not the one that we just had, but the one before, announcing that he is, quote, authorizing the Department of Commerce and the United States Trade Representative to oppose a 100% tariff on any and all movies produced in foreign lands. Trump deemed foreign productions a, quote, national security threat to the American movie industry, adding that they not only draw filmmakers out to other markets, but also bring messaging and propaganda into the United States. He then walked back a day or so later when people freaked out and was like, no, we're gonna talk to people in the film industry before we decide to do tariffs, because that's kind of the MO of the man's presidency. Is he says they're going to do a thing and then depending on how people react to it, he then will change what he says. I mean, like, it's just what he does. What I do want to talk about is what this does mean for the American film industry if these, like, however these tariffs get imposed, because films in general never get built or made, no matter who the producer is, solely on American soil anymore. And even when they're built on even when they're made in American soil, like, the locations of where those places are made is an ever evolving thing. I actually think this has a lot to do with its problems with Canada, because Canada has become a very popular location, specifically Vancouver, for people or for filmmakers to go and film because it's cheaper. And it's no secret that the president of the United States and Canada aren't best of friends right now. And so, you know, the United States isn't really going to, like, they want the Chinese film market. So they're making films that aim to please China. But I don't think that one's nearly as impactful as locations like Canada. The United States, it's really interesting when you watch credits, kids, and you want to see where a place is filmed, right before you get to the post-credit scene, you'll see all the thank yous and the unions, like, you'll see the Teamsters Union and this and that, but you'll also see City of Blank. And, like, for example, Thunderbolts that we just talked about, I think portions of it were filmed in Quebec, Canada. And so if you go through and you look at a lot of this, but one of the other states that used to be very, very popular, and I remember this specifically in the MCU, was the state of Georgia. And Georgia is still used quite a bit because, again, Georgia gave a lot of incentives for films, major blockbusters, to produce there. That changed a little bit with some of the regressive policies that the state legislature had put out. But it didn't mean that companies left the United States. They started going to places out west, like the Dakotas and Utah and Colorado. So I am very interested, what the fuck does a foreign produced film mean? And so I'll start with Tony this time. Tony, if you were to speculate, and that's all we can do, what would you think a foreign produced film would mean and qualify it for a tariff that would increase the cost of our movie ticket?
I think first you have to start with trying to understand how Trump acts and tries to formulate a discussion for an end means. He's a negotiator, so he's going to ask for more than he really wants. He thinks every situation he's on Shark Tank. Let's put it that way. He's going to come in. Sure. He's going to ask for way too much, knowing that he can get more that way by negotiating down. He's a master negotiator. Like, at the very least, no matter what side you're on, the guy is brilliant at negotiating deals, right? So that's kind of whether if that's good or bad in certain situations, it's bad. In certain situations, it's good. In certain situations, you're playing with things you shouldn't be playing with, right? But I don't know. I mean, continually calling them the 51st state doesn't really help. That's kind of patronizing up there, you know. But at the same time, if you try to look at it from another perspective, what's wrong with trying to go, let's push the business back into the country. Let's make people around the country more willing to do things like that. Milwaukee has hosted, I can give you three movies, Major League, first and foremost, most famously filmed at County Stadium. And then when Miller Park came in, Mr. 3000 with Bernie Mac, and Bridesmaids also has parts of it shot in Milwaukee. So if a town like that can cater to something, like, take some pride in it, bring some revenue in, you know, like, your town is going to go watch that movie if parts of it were filmed in it and you know about it. So I'm totally cool with trying to make more of the films shot here that way. As for bringing in tariffs on all this other stuff, this is just a political kind of bullshit getting caught up in the fucking web of whatever's going on. I mean, I don't want to get too political, so I'll just stick to just what I said right there.
I think, like Tunney says, Trump's a very good negotiator. I mean, and it's, as somebody who negotiates for a living myself, I look at what he does and say, it's pretty basic what he's doing. It's a common, I want 100% tariff. We're going to give you nothing. How about 50%? Okay. And, you know, it makes Trump seem like, well, he backed down when he really got 50% over zero. So it's a basic strategy. I think the bigger question is, you know, what are we doing as far as like the, you know, filming in America? People aren't coming to Hollywood and filming right as much as they used to be because the taxes in California are astronomical and stupid. So people aren't going down to Hollywood and saying, yeah, let's go on a soundstage at Paramount or someplace like that as much as they used to, because it's just not, it's not real friendly to a lot of these people who have to, you know, bring this movie in under budget, try to keep costs under control. And a lot of times, you know, you look at the movies that are being made, foreign locations have become a much bigger selling point. Like, let's film something in Iceland. Let's go to New Zealand and do all of the Lord of the Rings things and that sort of thing. So I think that's kind of a big part of it, is that if Trump really wants to make a difference and bring American, you know, people filming back in America more, he's got to incentivize kind of on a statewide level and say, hey, you've got to make this, you've got to make this more appealing. You've got to reduce some of the costs that are involved, because otherwise, yeah, you're going to slap 100% tariff on any movie that was filmed outside of the United States coming in here. That's not going to solve the problem either, you know, because I don't see how that solves a whole lot. But like,
I got to interject for 1 second. The majority of American films are still filmed in the United States of America.
Sure.
Partially. The majority, like, and contrary to what people believe, even with the taxes of California, studio films are still filmed in California.
Oh, sure.
And so I guess my big pushback on this whole thing is I don't know that it really is something that is a bargain that needs to be driven, because what defines a film not filmed in the United States of America?
Well, to your
because
point.
Because films that are not filmed on location, sure. And the overwhelming majority of films are filmed in the United States still.
Well, to your
point. That come from a domestic producer.
Yeah, to your point, so, if you film a movie that's partially filmed in the United States and partially outside, if you hit that with 100% tariff, then the guys are like, wait a second. Half of this movie is filmed fucking right here, and now you're wiping out our bottom line and reducing our visibility. Because of why?
The whole tariff thing is to cast as big a net as you can and recover as much workload as you can back into the United States. And that surely would boost the economy, right? Like, more jobs, more revenue. Like, there's no question. I think that's the ultimate goal. And this just falls into that net.
He throws tariffs around like it's a solution to everything. And it's not, you know, and that's his biggest downfall.
I just want to clarify.
I'm not saying it's an ultimate solution. I'm just saying this is the strategy that's being taken.
Yep. It worked so great when we were in the Great Depression. But anyway, it's a tough thing to do, and it's an interesting thing to see how Hollywood responds to it, because I do think that there has been a narrative and this idea, like, and it isn't to say that we don't film internationally. And I think that's the thing that is true. Like, when you make a movie like Mission Impossible, right? Like, that is, or a James Bond film, even, which isn't even an American property, though it's owned by an American studio. That's a fascinating story, by the way. But those films, like, it's, you know, they go to exotic places or far off countries and worlds. And yet they also film, like Mission Impossible always generally starts in the United States and then you go elsewhere. How does a film like that get impacted? To me, it's very much a question of what is the determination? What is the, as you talked about, Tony, the ratio, like, where does it go? Like, how do you decide that? You know, Industrial Light and Magic is the number one, like, is it about VFX? Is it about sound editing? Is it about, like, you know, cause we're only talking about it in terms of where it's shot. You know, you don't want to outsource to another company like Weta Digital, right? Like, Weta Digital is in New Zealand, because it was an offshoot of Peter Jackson. I think they're in New Zealand. And I don't even know if they're still around. But does that count? Like, is that what you're saying? Like, how does it all work? And like, so,
like you're saying, how do you define a foreign produced film? I mean, that's the key question, right? How do you define that?
Like, and the films that do, like, there, and it's not to say that foreign films don't hit huge. Godzilla Minus One. Born and raised in Japan.
Listen, if it's more than 10%, it's foreign. That's way too much foreign to be American. Less 9.9 American. 10% foreign, really bad, really
bad. Did you get recruited by SNL? All right, have you been working with
Knock on Duh?
That's a different.
Wouldn't be prudent. Not good for the economy.
All right, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. If it goes anywhere, too, because that's the other thing is sometimes something gets floated and it doesn't go anywhere. But it definitely made headlines, and then changed a little bit to a week. All right, fellas. Let's head into the home stretch of this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Nice little tight hour and a half long show. I'm feeling good. But we got to talk about what we're watching. And Dave, I'm going to save you for a second. You see that? I psyched you. The reason I'm saving you for a second is because the two shows that Dave's going to talk about, Dave and I are actively watching. So it seems only fair. So what are you watching, man?
One of the coolest things I've watched in the last week is the Kennedy Center Honors and the awarding of the Mark Twain Award for American Humor to Conan O'Brien and the people that showed up for that and the show that they put on and talking about Conan and the way he works and the jokes that were told and the semi-roast was amazing. It was really fun. It's a really good time. If you have a chance, I encourage you. Especially if you're a fan of stand-up comedy, late-night comedy, etc., to go ahead and check it out. It's such a good time. Other than that, just same stuff as usual. Gordon Ramsay, Next Level Chef, is winding down. Golf is in full swing. We got the PGA Championship next weekend. And I guess I'm getting an Apple subscription, guys, again. So there you go.
Welcome to the dark side. Before we get into the big two, Dave, Tony mentioned sports and the PGA Championship. The PBA is in the midst of its end of season tournament, which is a 3-weekend tournament. We are in the quarterfinal round right now, and I haven't finished watching yesterday's matchup. I only got to watch the first matchup between EJ Tackett and Simonson is his last name. I can't remember his first name. Great. I love watching the playoffs in the PBA because it is a race to two victories, race to 2 points. And so it's more, you know, most PBA tour events, it's a stepladder tournament. Once you lose, you're out and you move on. In this one, it's a double elimination tournament in a sense, because you lose that first game, you still have a chance to stay in and make it and match it up. And that's what happened with Tackett. Tackett lost his first round against Simo, slaughtered Simo in the second one. And then, as he has done all season for the last 3 seasons, ice water in his veins, advances to the semifinal round and finals, hopefully next week. But what's interesting is this is the farthest EJ has ever gone as the top bowler in the league. He's never made it past the quarterfinals in the PBA playoffs. So to win yesterday was a big step. Going to catch up on the second half of that tournament after we finish recording. But Dave, what are you watching other than the big two, or has it only been the big two?
No, it's, I think I started watching Three Body Problem, which DJ highly recommended. Yep. That. I think you've watched it as well. That's a really,
no, I have it on my list. It is something I want to watch.
Yeah. I got through the first episode, which was really good. My wife's a couple episodes ahead of me. Went back to Ted Lasso, knee deep into season 2. So getting through that, almost done with season 4 of, Skinwalker Ranch, which of course is more unidentified history ish. Fascinating stuff all the way around, but yeah, other than that, it's the big two.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk about, and this is, you know, we've talked a lot of Disney today. I finished reading the Disney family approved biography of Walt Disney this week. And it's an interesting book. It's a very friendly to Walt book. It sort of glosses over the fact that he hated unions and was very much part of trying to root out those goddamn commies in the 50s. But because of that, it did lead me to watching some of those old Walt Disney present hour-long specials that he used to film in an effort to build up excitement for Disneyland, and would show kind of their behind the scenes work in the creation of Disneyland. And it's just super fun. There's not many of them on Disney Plus, but to watch it and see those shows and to see him sort of talking about what he visualizes was really, really neat. the big two, everyone, Dave and I have both been keeping up with The Last of Us and, of course, Andor. We both posted on social media about how Andor is far and away the best Star Wars thing Disney has produced. Between it and Rogue One, it's not even close. And I enjoy a lot, and I enjoy quite a bit of other stuff that's been put out there. But Andor is in a level of special that I just don't know how to explain to people how good it is. And these two seasons truly tell you how we got to A New Hope. And that's what I love about it so much. And, you know, and it's has not been afraid to give you gut punches, to have harrowing stuff, to fill in blanks of things you may have had for Rogue One, filling in blanks that you may have had in the leading up to the original Star Wars trilogy, and also answering the question of how does Bail Organa look when it's no longer Jimmy Smits, but now I'm going to Benjamin Bratt as the character, all because of the great quote unquote scheduling conflict. But shows are phenomenal. Last of Us season two picking up steam. We're getting introduced to the hell that is Seattle. There's a lot of question of out there about how much of the video game will be maintained and how will they do it. But both are just terrific pieces of television right now.
Yeah, they are. And I think I messaged on X. I said, you know, how lucky are we to be going through these two shows are running simultaneously, and they are two of the best pieces of television ever. I mean, I don't think that's hyperbole to say when you look at these series, how great they are. You know, I mean,
I'm prone to hyperbole. I can't throw ever.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, come on now.
But
very, very good. Wonderful, wonderful, phenomenal programs.
But to have two of them running simultaneously.
I mean, these are really great shows. Everybody agrees. It's really good. I mean, you know, you get another Last of Us, a two. It's the two. The two of us are the Last of Us, you know, and or.
Go back to your home on Whore Island. You know, that's all I got to say. But,
Is that an inside joke? Did I miss that one?
That's just anything. But
gotcha.
Yeah, Last of Us. I mean, the stuff with Ellie and Dina, who, you know, I talked about her earlier. The same as Isabella Merced, who's playing Hot Girl, plays Dina in Last of Us. She's phenomenal. Bella Ramsey's phenomenal. This show just keeps ratcheting up the intensity. And yeah, you say how much of the video game is going to make it in here. Well, so far they haven't shied away from anything. And that's a big compliment to them. And Andor is just like, see, the massacre on Gorman was, good God, what an episode. I mean, my Lord, this just, when you get into it and you just, and I told people, it's like the great thing about Andor is you get to feel how you already know the odds are against the rebellion ever getting a foothold to begin with. When you watch the show, you realize just how astronomical those odds really were with counterintelligence and all this stuff. And as much as I love Mandalorian, it's not the same sort of show, and nothing is topping Andor right now. So yeah, this week we get the last three, and then you got to go and watch Rogue One right away, according to Diego Luna. So, but we did get to see where he got his assassin droid in this last batch of episodes. So that was cool.
We did. It was awesome. And those are the things, like the little Easter eggs here or there that they're throwing towards you as we head towards, sadly, the final episodes of Andor next week. Such a great show. Someday, Tony, I hope you check it out. It's worth the time to check out. I really do. I know. I heard the speech. I heard the whole Jedi speech.
It's going to fall the way of like Breaking Bad and, you know, things of that nature, where I agree. You're right. You're absolutely right.
No. All right. Well, what I'm also right about is that it is time to wrap up the program. And so before we get out of here, gentlemen, let's do a quick once around. Let's start with Dave today. Tell everybody where they can find you out there on the socials and how to listen to you on the Chair Shot Radio Network.
Yeah, you can find me on X and on Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. Make sure you check out the latest edition of the Big Five Project, where me and Tunney and DJ and Rob review King of the Ring 95, so you don't have to watch it. You're welcome.
Rob finished his bottle of Jack Daniels during that podcast recording, just so everybody knows.
That's
like Rob, like Rob like grew so close to my heart during that show. It's amazing.
Yes.
You can follow me at PC Tunney. Just Chairshot Radio Network, all your favorite streaming platforms. Like, if you're into Marvel, DC, Star Wars, Disney, like, we're here for you right here. Bandwagon Nerds, you know that already. Sports, these two guys with me here, Four Corners, they're covering a lot of shit. And what they don't cover, me, Ray, and Andrew got for you on Pod is War. Wrestling, Dave already said, Attitude of Aggression, not only covering all the biggest pay-per-views in history for WWE, but giving you our take with DJ on what's happening right now. And speaking of DJ, Mindless Wrestling Podcast just went undefeated picking Backlash. All three of them were in sync and picked every match correctly. So, I mean, this network is crazy and I love it. Not to mention Greg and Patrick and DP and I, just lifelong best friends, a couple of pairs right there. And Dave, you're our bestie on DWI. You know that. So follow me at PC Tunney.
Cool. You can follow me on the X and all the other social media platforms at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. He's not here, so he can't stop us from doing it. Also follow Ray Cash at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in money. Is there a dollar sign in that cash or is it just?
Oh, yeah. Cash? I think he's the Void right now, or is he Sentry?
He's clearly the
Master. Yeah, Void the Master, Void with, Master with a dollar sign.
If you're searching there. But yes, there is a dollar sign in there as well. Also, make sure you follow at Bandwagon Nerds. That's our social there as well. And then you can listen to me every Monday, Tuesday, and most Wednesdays on the Chairshot Radio Network. I say most Wednesdays, let's be honest. It's on some Wednesdays. Probably the ratio has flipped in a different direction. But Mondays, you can hear me talking nerdy stuff with these guys. Tuesdays, talking sports with David Ungar. Wednesdays, talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco when we feel like it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Now, get yourself out of the basement. Get some sun and rewatch Thunderbolts. Check out some of these shows we've been watching. Watch Andor, for God's sakes. Just don't be Tunney. Watch Andor. Like, don't let it fall by the wayside. Or watch a cooking show with Tunney. Like, do a streaming watch along with Tunney. Watch Gordon Ramsay or something. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of Chairshot.com.
You met her at a funeral.
Yeah. Dude died in a hang gliding accident. What an idiot. Oh, I'm hang gliding, honey. Take a good picture. I'm dead. What a freak.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.